5 years ago now, when we were back there visiting, not having been there for 25 years, the changes were enormous. Because what we saw could almost be the opposite of what used to be there. In place of the barren and weedy fields that we remember tramping over when we went to see our friends, there were green pastures and good-looking cattle. And in place of the unpainted and somewhat dilapidated farmhouses, there were nicely painted, well put together houses, sometimes rebuilt, sometimes these same ones fixed up. And this was a gratifying thing to see and to be told by some of our friends, including the president of the college, who is still living there in retirement, and some of the farmers who were hard-working members of our cooperatives, that all of the things that we were engaged in with our adult education emphasis were in the right direction, a direction that was leading towards, was not responsible for these huge changes that could only come about by a change in the economy, but which were in the right direction, so that when the pressure mounted for change, there was a way to go that had been, and that included racial relations too, because ever since those early days when we, as you remember, introduced into some of the laboratory schools studies of intercultural sociology, this has become an interest, a major interest, I would say, of that college in its teacher training work. And the public schools of the area have been the beneficiaries of that training and that interest. So that Carroll County has always been a leader in the South in the improvement of understanding between ethnic groups.
Don't you think we can attribute it to some of the things that our group did?
As I said, I think the things that our group did pointed the direction. And as the necessity for change mounted, the direction was already there.
Yes.
That's really what we did.
All right. Then you came back from Carroll County and came back to New Jersey, didn't you?
I came back to New Jersey because I am amused as I think back at this. Our work at the college with the farmers of Carroll County and their cooperatives had attracted the attention of the president of the National Farmers Union, who lived in Denver, Colorado. But he had heard about it, came down to visit, spent several days, and said, we want this kind of education in the National Farmers Union, which is one of the three big national farm organizations in the country. Will you come and help us do it in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, where we have an opening and we need that kind of help? And I felt this might be a interesting next step, and I've mentioned my restless habits, and here was another example of it.
Yes.
And so the step was taken. We moved to New Jersey and became an education director for the National Farmers Union in Pennsylvania, New Jersey. It was
to you, was it interesting?
Yes, very interesting. It was summer. It was exhausting because I had a huge territory. It was not like one county.
No.
It was two states.
Yes.
And I was driving night and day, going to meetings and visiting farms and all the rest and building cooperatives. But I managed to do that for 4 years before I really exhausted myself. And I think the family, too, because they saw very little of me and the whole thing was difficult. And so we were very happy indeed when the invitation came to return to be headmaster at Shady Hill.
That must have been terribly exciting, because after having started there more or less,
yes, I did.
You came back.
Yes.
And you came back this time with a son.
Yes.
Because your son had been born in Atlanta, but when you were in Carrollton.
Right, and raised in Carrollton those 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very, very pleased about that, but we were very happy to be asked to come back to Cambridge.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed there for, as headmaster, and did, I'm sure, a superb job. Everyone I talk with says it was. Well, for how long?
13 years.
13 years. And then this restlessness took over, or was it that you felt that you had done as much there as you... Both.
Both. Maybe the two are opposite sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there was more I could have done. Perfectly sure of that. But it was very hard to resist the invitation from Sergeant Schreiber,
mm-hmm.
who had heard about the work in both Georgia and New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and wanted that kind of training for his Peace Corps
mm-hmm.
volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was the time of the Jack Kennedy era,
mm-hmm.
and I would have stayed on happily at Shady Hill had it not been for that request to
mm-hmm.
go into the government and use some of this rather special experience that I had had on an international stage.
Yes.
And that was very appealing.
Yes.
Very appealing, particularly with the heavy emphasis upon peaceful
yes.
skills.
Yes.
Training.
And you'd had, all of this had been leading up to it, really, hadn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right.
Everything
oh, yes,
all went along, although
yes.
you changed. You really never did change
no.
directions.
No. And of course, I saw the Peace Corps, you know, as something my... much even more significant than its name, I saw it as growing perhaps with experience to become that wonderful, to fulfill that wonderful concept of, I think it was William James,
mm-hmm.
A means to find a moral equivalent for war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with that kind of missionary hope that I entered
mm-hmm.
and worked terribly hard. And there were many frustrations along the way, which are now well understood by all who have had anything to do with the Peace Corps. But at that time, it was a very compelling leadership and concept
mm-hmm.
of education.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Fred Whale, who was an old friend of yours,
yes.
and Carmen, his beautiful wife, and in Puerto Rico, again on adult education.
Yes.
And they, of course, this is another story, and I mustn't get into it, but they had developed what I guess you and I and many others considered to be a unique and most marvelous program of adult education throughout the island of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that whole apparatus at the disposal of me and the Peace Corps,
mm-hmm.
I being the coordinator of
yes.
the Peace Corps effort in Puerto Rico. And so we had our volunteers out with Fred Wales, community organizers,
yes.
all over the island, talking in Spanish, learning how to build dams and to plant crops and care for the sick
mm-hmm.
and feed children and do all the rest of it, to immunize people and to kill the lethal germs and bacteria in the lakes and rivers and all of this, preparatory to their going on to similar environments in Latin America,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed to me to be very close to that original promise
mm-hmm.
that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do too. I mean, to me, I haven't known too much about your Peace Corps work, but this is—I knew it just all went. Everything was a piece.
Yeah.
Although you say you've changed, you never really have.
Not basically, no. Mm-hmm.
Your directions
different environments.
Yes.
Similar missions.
Yes. Your missions have been almost identical in a way, it
many
seems to me.
Many things in common, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then this last phase, you know, with...
I want to go into that now. Tell about what you're doing now.
Well, you've got most of that in the written thing. But,
I do, but I we'll
I'll
have
give
it...
you a little bit.
The written thing won't be in this tape.
Right, all right. Oh, I'll give you just a sense of it. Coming back from that experience and working as I did for the National Association of Independent Schools because I needed a place to work and they kindly offered me a position on their staff, I went to England, and this was about 1967, and saw what I had already heard about in some growing detail. a method of teaching children of primary and elementary grades that was utterly different from even our most progressive schools, which I had grown up in through my own life and been familiar with through my subsequent teaching life. And the difference was primarily one of extending great amounts of trust and responsibility and respect to even quite young children, with the expectation that with that kind of responsibility, they could learn to learn themselves with much less teaching from a teacher, from an adult, but using the environment around them, each other, and many adults as their sources of learning, and that they could accomplish this with a minimum of confusion, and having learned much about the skills of self-discipline and self-regulation.
That's didn't some of it kind of go back to the one-room school in the sense that it wasn't, I mean, the grades weren't all separate?
Well, they were mixed by age, yes.
Yes, whereas you see in the one-room schools in Georgia and Westport here,
yes.
They were mixed.
Exactly. I felt that we have in this country, particularly in such schools as you described, many, many deep roots that intermingle with those that one sees in the British schools now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've developed in very different ways subsequently, but that the roots are there, quite intermingled. And it was that that gave me hope that this fascinating kind of education that I saw going on could, in fact, find nourishment in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set myself to doing all that I could to bring across people who could help train our teachers in the methods and techniques and points of view, because it was as much attitudes and points of view as it was techniques. And for the next 7 or 8 years, that's what I did fully, and by having teacher training sessions and going to colleges and bringing teachers. I went to England every year and recruited teachers from the classrooms to come and spend the summers in this country and run training sessions and so forth.
And you founded the organization?
It
was here.
It was here
and you just took made it useful.
It gave
The National Association of Independent Schools.
That's right. And they gave me a chance to work and a salary and an office and and an apparatus of schools. So to which I could go and say, you know, here's this wonderful thing going on. If you will have a summer workshop in your school, I'll provide the English director, and you can help by finding some money, because that's going to take some, and I'll help. I'll find some too, and we'll have a workshop for teachers who had to come not just from independent schools, according to our ground rules, but from the public schools too. So I think our efforts touched public education in this country just as much as private education.
I think it's I don't think you'll ever realize how much it has changed.
Oh, I think so. I think that's
education
true.
In this country. I mean, people sometimes can praise it and sometimes can damn it, but
yes.
It has touched it.
It has
and
touched
it. I think in the end it will evidently, obviously, as your what you wrote says, it's on the track, right track,
yes.
And it is fundamentally right,
yes.
And it will end up
yes.
that no one's going to damn it.
Well, I think it's just exactly the same as everything else in that it requires great skill, great sensitivity, much training. It cannot be something that can be achieved by merely pushing the furniture around and saying, now I have an open classroom.
No, no.
It's a completely altered point of view about learning, about children, and about one's own learning as an adult, as well as about the learning in children.
You know, I was listening to the Today Show the other day, and that cute man with the mustache, and the dark hair and all. What is his name? Anyhow, he came out after they had been talking, parents and with each other about the problems of bringing up their children, with the fact that teaching was the greatest of all arts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think when we begin to realize that, we may get somewhere.
Yes. Well, I'm glad he said that. I think we would subscribe to that.
Yes. Well, I think you've just said it too, in another way, that it all has to work together. It all has to come. And I mean, painting and even composing or anything else that we might do is simpler.
Yes.
Than teaching.
Yes. Maybe so.
But you aren't there. Well, I've almost arrived at it. Now let's go to Westport.
All right.
You've been here all these years, and your family were here all these years, and you love it, and you sail the seas, and you till the soil, and so on, more or less.
Well,
you haven't lived here all year long.
No.
You haven't voted here.
No.
And all, but someday you may.
Yes.
And even having lived here as a great part of the time, and loving it, is there anything from your point of view that you would like to see stopped going in the direction it's going in, or changed in any way?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am sure there are certain things that I feel are necessary in order to preserve the character of Westport that all of us think of as being so unique and so much a part of what we love about the place. And of course, one of them is the zoning and the restrictions on the abuse of land. And I don't think of zoning in the snob sense at all. I only think of it as a necessary way of preserving the quality of the land itself, the water, and not only the purity, but the beauty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's that I think needs constant attention. There are too many grandfather clauses, too many abuses still, in spite of many gains that have been made during the years that I can remember and you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd say that would be one of the things that I feel needs continuous vigilance. Another is the preservation of the beach and sand dunes and salt marshes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different problem because it has to do with different legislation and Wetlands Act and the other kinds of bills that are well meant but must be enforced to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And makes no difference, of course, how good the law is if it isn't backed up by a presence of enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that area that our problems on the beach, sand dunes, and salt marshes arise.
Yes, and you know, a great many of them, we, without the state having the concept, can't do ourselves, even if we do. It's part. I mean, Westport isn't isolated. It's part of Massachusetts, and Massachusetts is, of course, is part of the United States.
Yes.
So it's some of these big problems that we do have and recognize have to evolve all together, I think.
I do too. I think they do, absolutely, Mary. And when it comes to more specific questions such as should the let be opened and developed and so forth, I'm afraid I tend to be very conservative on that because I've seen the places on Long Island Sound that have developed harbors for heavy boating use, and I'm not happy with what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And those highly developed, heavily used, shallow waterways. Therefore, I tend to be conservative about promotion of greater use of the waterways of Westport. One of the things that has kept this community as charming as it is the relative difficulty of getting in and out of the harbor.
Yes.
And I don't minimize that, even though I've hit bottom a few times with my boat.
Yes.
And have gone aground. We all have. But, you know, every time that happens, I am reminded that, in a way, that's a preservative of something very, very precious here.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for coming down this Saturday afternoon when you could easily have been doing something much more interesting.
Mary, it's been a pleasure to reminisce with you. And thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.